And hello, it is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And we are starting our second season, which is great. And I have, you know, one of my favorite guests here this evening. You know, most people here know Bart Smit, and he's been doing trance for over 20 years, working professionally as a spiritual teacher and educator and channeler all over the world, really. And you know, he has experienced different states of consciousness and has gained a wealth of knowledge about very subtle states. Now, Dr. Williams, who is channeled by Bart, serves as Bart's teacher and beloved mentor, and who guides him and helps him to understand these subtle realms. Dr. Williams is pure consciousness and has been liberated from the cycle of birth and death. So we are very honored and blessed this evening to have Dr. Williams with us to start off the new season, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. So, welcome.
All right, thank you very much.
I just wanted to also say, we're going to start off because, you know, we started this year with a New Year's message from you. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the death of the ego.
Right.
Now, I think we've all been experienced different, unique experiences mm-hmm. that are very all very different, from, you know, emotional crises to, you know, very physical things like, oh, I don't know, cracking necks and, you know, having ear problems, having eye problems, having dizziness. I mean, I think we're experiencing a lot of trauma. And is there any way to make this less dramatic? Is there anything that we should be, you know, to helping us understand what we're going through?
You know, it's interesting here because I can't imagine how many years I've been telling people to meditate. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, we're making a shift from allowing the ego to truly become our identity. And I think that's a lot of people beginning to understand. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that the ego is an aspect of our personality. So we are looking at the ego very much as it is a negative, instead of it is a false sense of our own identity that actually keeps us within the same reality. It's a pretty extraordinary time because individuals are actually, for the first time, moving into a new space where their a mind isn't so much just their identity. They're beginning to tap in to listening to their soul. And that's a new concept because we're more interested in what our mind is doing or what we're thinking, or the chemical reactions of our mind. And so people are all of a sudden dramatically waking up out of a deep sleep and having all these dramatic experiences and realize that if they don't get on the boat at this particular point, they're going to miss it. So why is this happening? A part of the back part of the brain, which is basically the reptilian brain or the brain stem, has had only, let's say, about 10% true consciousness. So as an individual, 90% of our reactions are unconscious. And so we've been going through life pretty well, only 10% being conscious. Then we also simultaneously have what's called cognitive consciousness, is that basically that we are completely in this moment and can carry the experience of this particular moment. And with this whole shift within humanity, which is much more used to just following these false senses of our identity, we're all of a sudden beginning to make a shift within the part of the reptile brain or part of the brain stem, where we're expanding consciousness. So all of a sudden, we are more aware, we're more alert. And so where it used to be only 10% or 5% for the average individual, it is beginning to expand to 15%. And as we're expanding, all of a sudden, we're beginning to question, do I want to be with this person? Do I want this particular job? And for a lot of individuals, because this expansion of consciousness is actually happening, they feel out of whack. They're not centered. They have accidents. They have ear infections. They have floaters that literally go through their in front of their eyes. People feel dizzy because we're not used to being that cognitive conscious within this moment and really carry this moment at this particular time.
And so meditation is required because the entire physical body is going through such a dramatic changes at this stage of the game. And so the physical symptoms are the burning of karma of bringing us back into that cognitive consciousness.
And so is there anything, though, that can assist us to just meditation?
I think, first of all, I think meditation is incredibly important because it really is where we are going to listen. As a society, we have not listened to the soul. We've listened to our mind. We've listened to our thoughts. We have listened to everything around us. We have not really truly listened to what is my soul saying to me. And so the soul doesn't really speak in words. The soul speaks within a deep sense of silence. And we've walked away from silence. And now we are forced to get into a place of silence, of actually listening. And so the moment we are beginning to pay attention to the depth of our soul, which actually, if we are ignoring the soul, we are beginning to have all these symptomatic experiences, which means anger and confusion and disconnection and unhappiness. And so what happens is that we are beginning to get a sense of what it is like to actually begin to understand the natural movements of the soul. And so we are actually burning through what might have taken several years of therapy, for instance. And certainly it means that someone needs to have done therapy, and certainly not, that doesn't dismiss therapy, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But people who have done a certain amount of work are all of a sudden experiencing such a huge dramatic changes of the death of their ego that they literally, in a sense, are overtaken by such false sense of identity, and yet simultaneously coming out of the other end and feeling all of a sudden they have shed a layer that they have never been able to shed in the past. And so we are shedding all these layers that have actually stopped us from listening to the rhythm and the movement of the soul. It is an interesting experience that we have followed a particular rhythm of our culture, which means that we as a culture, as much as we believe that we are an individual making individual choices, the question is how many choices actually are there? Are the government making choices? Or are we only making choices in which our family have actually taught us? So in a sense, we believe that we're making individual choices, making very healthy choices. But are the choices in which we are accessing a collaboration of our experiences, our culture, our city? So karma is not just within ourselves. We have karma with ourselves. We have karma with our family. There's karma of a city. There's karma of a country. So what's happening is that we are beginning to burn through this limited pot of consciousness where we feel we're making choices, and yet the same experiences, just repackaged in a different way. We keep creating new packaging where at this particular point, we're not interested in repackaging our lives or packaging different relationships. We're actually at a particular point that we're trying to cut through that process and actually simply say, I don't want to repackage this. I don't want to behave in a similar way, but just with a different person. I want to put a stop to this now. I want to look at how am I relating? What am I doing? What am I saying? What am I not doing? This is happening in jobs. It's happening within people. It's happening within relationships. People are beginning to wake up and simply saying, have I only recreated the same packaging, the same scenarios, but just repackages? And so individuals are beginning to develop the awareness that we have been reshuffling, repackaging, and not really nurturing the most important element, which is our soul. And then as we are actually nurturing the soul, then we can begin to say, what do I need to shift within my relationships? What do I need to shift within my job? Everyone is questioning on a massive basis around the world because they're not just allowing the karma of their family or their karma of their, I suppose you could say their family lineage. They're no longer allowing the culture to give them a set of rules or follow the rules of a culture. People are actually burning through parts of their karma and beginning to look outside the box of what they culturally have never done. We've always followed a rhythm without really questioning, is this the life in which I truly desired? How many people are stuck within a relationship? How many people are stuck within a particular job? How many people are basically simply saying, this is really not divinely nurturing me? And that is because we've looked on the outer realms trying to find that satisfaction or that nurturing. And we're actually now beginning to listen to the soul, which is not a form of communication, but a sense of union. And within that, we're simply saying, okay, now I'm beginning to get some ideas of what pieces of the puzzle that I'm needing to put together, because I'm out of my realm of what kind of job or relationships or changes I want to make, because this is a new realm of consciousness. And I'm just needing to take it day by day, putting new pieces of the puzzle together, because there is no blueprint, either within the family or within the lineage of our family or culturally. We're breaking out of the cultural and family trees of behavior.
Yeah. And I think that's really, you know, I think that's really huge point about what's happening, because I think, you know, within relationships, within jobs, everything, everybody is really starting to question, and there really isn't any type of it, what we've done in the past just can't work anymore. I mean, we're really, really stepping outside of the box.
Right. And what does that look like? And nobody really knows.
No.
And so we don't know what it looks like. And the only way to create is to basically really divinely feel these rhythms. Individuals are beginning to understand that meditation is the foundation of what we require. Yeah. People are also beginning to understand that they've had a false sense of this Hollywood experience. They're beginning to understand that a moment of silence within meditation, even though that might be 3 minutes, it might be 1 moment, it might be 5 minutes, if you embrace that pure silence, if you embrace and dive into this abode of consciousness, that single drop of a minute or two or three or four is more powerful than the remaining of your time when your mind wanders around. Mm. So people are beginning to get that drop of silence, that drop of pure space between a space, that pure sense of losing that cognitive awareness, that single drop is going to liberate you further than the 45 minutes or the 55 minutes of pure distraction. So we're beginning to turn our perception and our reality around, where we're not just saying, oh, I'm not happy with my mind. We're no longer just interested in the senses of what isn't happening in our meditation. We're beginning to applaud and weave together this tapestry of moments of silence, and we're beginning to embrace that as that has meaning. And so the mind says, if I meditate, I must have 30, 40 minutes of pure bliss. But in actuality, we can't really sustain that state. We're going to culturally. So when one meditates for 30, 40 minutes and we have these little moments, because we're weaving and building ourselves up to having the ability to fully experience that abode of grace. And that is why people are having difficulties and feeling that their egos are inflamed. And that is why people feel, in, you know, they're having infections and all these different things, because we're burning these layers and layers so that we can sustain this constant stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So as an individual, we are gradually, without really going into all of this too much, there is a pulse of consciousness, there is a wave of consciousness, and there is a stream of consciousness. And these are different ways in which we experience reality. And so what's happening is that we're beginning, when we have the right teacher, when we have the right individuals, and we're beginning to understand that when we are in meditation and we ride that wave of pure consciousness, even if it's two or three, that single drop is more powerful than anything. And we're beginning no longer to have this false sense of entertainment or busyness. We are more looking forward to that moment, that single drop of pure grace, and we're just no longer quite interested in everything else.
Right. Well, I was just going to remind people that this is a call-in. They could call us at 416-690-6391, or they can also email us at lori@intuitivesoul.com. But I think we're probably getting a call right now. But I guess, you know, the big thing is really living in the moment. It's really letting go of all of our preconceived notions and mm-hmm. just really focusing each moment just now and just correct. Allowing everything to sort of happen instead right. of trying to make it happen.
Correct. It is interesting because individuals are speaking very much about the power of now. This wonderful author of Eckhart Tolle.
Yes.
And so we're talking about the power, but is it really this moment that we're actually capturing? So we're talking about being in the moment. Is it really that we can actually be in this second and not 2 seconds from now, not 3 seconds from now? Can we actually, and this is a new concept, we are learned and trained and conditioned to continuously scan. Mm. So we are individuals that are scanning on a regular basis. And so what does that mean? It means that we have to be alert by a multitude of things around us. We are continuously needing to figure out if people are upset, are people angry? We're needing to concentrate on subways and traffic. We are conditioned no longer to connect to this moment or the power of this second because we are continuously in automatic mode and needing to respond or mainly react to the experiences around us instead of being able to say, what does it mean to stop this constant scanning of what people are thinking or feeling vulnerable or feeling scared or feeling out of sync? Or what is my husband or my wife or my... We're always scanning. It's what we've learned as a culture. So we are riding the adrenaline of time and we are riding the adrenaline of emotions. And so we're learning how to put a stop to this constant wave of adrenaline and time that we have learned to let it become our identity.
Right. Okay, well, we have our first caller. It's Linda Rasico.
Oh.
And so I'm going to try and put her on without too much feedback here.
All right.
So just a sec. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Do you have a question for Dr. Williams?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Oh.
You're on the air.
Yes. Oh, hi, Dr. Williams.
How are you?
Good. If I'm meditating on a regular basis every day for 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
how do I hear what the soul is saying versus my ego or just what I've read in books?
All right. So that's a brilliant question. So first of all, the ego, or I should say the soul, doesn't communicate in words. Our ego communicates in words. So where most individuals come out of meditation and they were to say, oh, I was told this by spirit and I was told that by spirit and my soul told me to do this and this is my... That has nothing to do with your soul. So the soul, you could say, is pure consciousness. The soul is either, in a sense, we experience it as a wave, a pulse, or a stream. When you are in meditation, you are all of a sudden in this moment where you really want to dismiss any dialogue. Yes, do people want to have answers in which they're looking for? Indeed, they are. I always suggest that if you were to look for a particular answer, the best thing is to meditate. Forget about your question. Pick up the pen and piece of paper. Don't really try to come back fully as far as cognitively is concerned and keep it to a quarter of a page, for instance. Because if you allow, spirit will just continue on forever. So you really want to get as articulate as you want that energy. You want to capture that energy. So if you look at someone like, individual like Bart, he doesn't allow, in a sense, this dialogue. Or he also is fully aware that if we are having a dialogue with our mind, it means we haven't really stepped out of the center of the mind. So the mind is very tricky, and the ego is very tricky. And the ego wants to have a dialogue because it doesn't want you to experience this wave of consciousness. And so the ego is going to give you all kinds of distractions of thoughts, imagery, all these distractions. Now, for an individual, imagine that you are standing on a platform, and this platform has wheels. And imagine that somebody has a rope attached to this particular platform. And imagine that all of a sudden you're standing in the center of your mind. And all of a sudden you are willing yourself out of, and somebody's pulling the rope, and you're basically being pulled backwards as you are actually moving out of the center of the room. The mind wants to keep you somewhere within the peripheral of the center of the mind. So imagine like a tree trunk that has endless circles. And so the mind wants to keep you within that bandwidth of consciousness. It realizes that the moment you cross that threshold and you are more interested, not in the absolute dialogue, but you're actually interested in falling into the silence. For some, they literally feel their body going backwards, almost as they can fly. So a great being can be in the middle of their mind, and all of a sudden, almost as there would be a movement where there's a string attached to your heart, and someone were to pull that, and your body would more or less collapse, and you would move backwards, that movement of separating right out of it. You know, a woman once explained that it was very much where she felt there was this huge movement, almost like a bomb, and she felt that she was pushed into orbit. Well, in a sense, that is the most extreme, where the kundalini just too actively comes forward, and that's what happens to some people. But if I were to just move, and my meditation, if I don't have a purpose of my meditation, I am going to go around and around. So in other words, if I get into my car and I don't have a destination, I'm not going to go anywhere. So my destination is to create a bridge from my mind into my heart. Also, my destination would be to step out of the layers. Imagine a record that has all these grooves, and you're needing to get to the end of the record where there is no grooves. Before the grooves actually start, that is where you're needing to get to, so that you actually are standing still, and you can actually, interestingly enough, feel this movement. Just as the earth turns around, you can actually watch the mind for the first time. So if you are meditating for several hours a day, and you're not really requesting properly that you're really needing to step out of the mind, or that your intent needs to be really pure, that you become the witness. And for most individuals, they like the entertainment, or they like the vision, or they allow their mind. What you're really interested in is to just to be watching the mind having its dialogue while you are standing at the end of the Milky Way, for instance. And you're watching the earth, in a sense, moving around as it's rotating. Similarly, as the mind endlessly chit-chats, you are standing at the end of the Milky Way, watching the mind. And eventually, as you stand on the outer skirts of the mind's dialogue, the mind falls deeply within silence. and then all of a sudden wakes up again and creates dialogue. And that is why, if my purpose of my meditation is not to be discontent, if I criticize my meditation, it becomes my reality. If I wait for this all endless Hollywood experience, then I am falsely identifying the inner self. But if I am just looking for a glimpse of silence, this abode, this wave, and I've really learned to stand at the outer, one of the things in which is always interesting, you know, when people are meditating, all of a sudden, you know, they're quite harassed by the sounds that surround them, and they don't understand. If you are attached to the outer sounds, even by what you hear, you are still within the center of the mind. And so you'll find it interesting that a part of the training in which Bart went through, I would have him listen to sounds and musics and go into meditation until he could literally, it's like being in a crowd and stepping so far away from your senses that eventually all the sound of the radio would all just become this, and we can just hear it as background noise. In a similar sense, this is what needs to happen in order to feel the waves of the soul. So the soul doesn't communicate. The soul we cannot communicate with unless we step out of our senses. We step out of the center of the mind. And when we completely step out of the center of the mind and really quietly sit and listen, we will feel a deep sense of knowing, a deep sense of inspiration, a deep sense of auspiciousness, a deep sense of wisdom, because these are the characteristics of the soul.
Did that answer your question, Linda?
Yes, it did. And I have Lori here that wants to ask.
Oh, go for it.
Lovely.
Okay, just a sec. Hello?
All right, very good.
Hello?
All right.
Hello.
So, should I ask my question?
Yes, please.
Okay, so we talk about the mind sinking into the heart.
Correct.
And I'm wondering, when we talk about the heart, where is the location of the heart? Are we talking about the heart chakra, or is the heart surrounding the body? Is the heart in the crown? Is the heart everywhere?
Okay.
So what are we talking about with the heart?
All right. So the actual heart, so we're not actually talking about the physical heart. We're actually talking about the spiritual heart. This is an interesting concept. If we're just trying to bring the mind into the heart, well, that isn't really possible because the heart basically pumps blood, so that certainly isn't going to be a possibility. However, the mind, or certainly I would say the heart, is the center of all consciousness. So imagine there is a palace, imagine there is a temple, and that temple is within your subtle bodies, within your light body, within, it isn't just, in a sense, the physical movement, it is in the location. So there's the physical body, which is the actual physical heart. And then beyond that, we have the light body and the subtle bodies. And within these layers, there is a palace, there is a cave, there is a temple. What is difficult to understand for most individuals, that this is the center of the universe. So what does that mean? It means that you are an individual, a single cell of consciousness, but you are connected to the collective consciousness. The reason this is a difficult concept for individuals to understand, because we've associated with each other as you and I are the collective, instead of the collective being the entire universe. And yes, indeed, you are a part of the universe. So we have a false sense. It's part of our cultural deterioration. So in a sense, you could say that a village that raises a child, it doesn't exist any longer. We're all trying to survive. We're all trying to relate. We're all trying to. So in a sense, the fragmentation of our origin is in no longer intact. We have a false sense of the collective. We're trying to survive. We're all trying to survive in our own way. We're all trying to be happy people, trying to be happy with jobs. We're all trying to survive. Why are we surviving? Because we're not understanding the collective. So most individuals see that their connection is more of a cave mentality, meaning that as individuals, we feel that we need to play by this collective, which is outwardly instead of the collective being inwardly. We've gotten a false sense of the collective. So if I don't play by the rules of my family, I'm going to get abandoned. Or if I don't play by the rules of the tribe or the village, I'm going to get hit over my head. So in a sense, we have shifted the collective. Instead of being inwardly, we've projected it outwardly. And this reason, we are continuously feeling dissatisfied and not truly feeling a deep sense of nurture. But in actuality, the center of consciousness, or the center of universe, let me rearticulate that, the center of the universe is actually within the heart. So we're not talking about the physical heart, we're talking about the spiritual heart. So if I shift my awareness that the collective isn't about you and I, but the collective is inwardly, does that mean the entire universe is right within me? Absolutely. But we see the universe with our eyes outwardly. And so therefore, we're trying to reach outwardly because that is our reality. We can only digest by what our experiences are. So we see that this wall and this floor and this ceiling and this environment and my mother and my father, we just see all of this as real. But imagine that that's all a holodeck. It's all not, it's an illusion. It is real, but it is an illusion. And that is a difficult concept. But if I not dismiss my mother and father, not that I do not love them, but in actuality say that my union is with God. And if I find that union isn't that I'm trying to connect to everybody else, and I'm continuously playing out all these abandonment issues with the universe and my job because we're continuously feeling that we are abandoned by God. So within the core of our false sense of identity, we need to play by the rules of the cave, and that has become our collective, for instance. And so we're continuously keep acting out the issues of abandonment because the mind perceives that we are abandoned by God. So what does that have to do with the heart? If I were to go into meditation and really contemplate, does it mean that I'm actually not abandoned by God? Because I've been reaching outwardly instead of inwardly, but my reality tells me that I'm separate from God because my mind feels I'm abandoned by God. So if I can make that slight change in perception and actually say, okay, so I'm not abandoned by God. So in actuality, God is inwardly, and I've been looking for God outwardly, and I haven't been finding God. I see the magic of God, which happens eventually, because we develop the awareness that we're truly within our heart, and then we see God everywhere. But most individuals aren't within their heart. They're in their head, and they don't see the magic of God. And so once we actually begin to realize that our heart, the area of our heart within our subtle bodies, lies the sacred temple. Within that space lies the entire universe. And so we are imagining this huge, enormous place. But in actuality, it is as tiny as a seed that you can imagine. But of course, that's difficult for me to say to you, you know, enter into the seed, because we can't imagine that. But our mind can imagine that there's actually a temple, and that we can walk into the temple and walk into the heart. And instead of having these outward abandonment issues that we're trying to work out, we're actually trying to draw the mind inwardly and stop acting out all the abandonment issues and reoccurring abandonment issues. And so we cannot experience God if we are fully feeling that we are disconnected by God, and the mind is keeping you so busy. Because as we sit in meditation, the mind goes, I'm abandoned, I'm abandoned, I'm abandoned. But is it really saying I'm abandonment, or is it just bringing up all these different issues? It's bringing all these different issues because the core issue, we believe we are separate or abandoned by God. And so within the heart area lies a temple. And even though when we step into this temple, it feels enormous And we are connected to the entire universe. There is an expansion beyond our human comprehension. It is actually the size of a seed. For some, when they walk into their temple, it is a palace, almost as a crystal palace. For some, they see the most extraordinary rainbow colors and gems. And for some, they feel this endless ocean. So, does it mean we all need to see the same thing? No. It actually means the mind will eventually try to interpret it the best way it possibly can. And so for some, they experience this ocean that they're just gliding on. So in other words, you're not sinking. You're actually feeling that you are floating on water. And you're actually just in awe of this vast expansion. For others, they feel that the walls are covered by gems and the energy is so extraordinary that they feel these waves or pulses. When we get into the heart and we are in this abode, we can feel these waves or we can feel pulses. So for some, a wave is where we're experiencing this vast consciousness. And when we experience a pulse, it feels like this electrical current that is moving through our body. And sometimes our body can actually twitch, where we're actually feeling these physical symptoms, because that's where that energy, we're beginning to connect beyond the sensations or the consciousness of the mind. So the heart is a temple that lies within the area of the heart, that is actually the center of the entire universe. And when we can bring the mind into the center of the heart, then we're no longer having this false ideology that what we're seeing with our eyes is real. We're actually feeling such union with unity, with God. We are returning to this union of unity with God. And we are no longer feeling this sense of loneliness or separation or lack of identity. And we're beginning to materialize and manifest different realities within our lives because we're rearranging the perception of our reality. And for most individuals that just sit in meditation and they're just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, the ego will never let you go. The ego will drag you around the block. They are literally, as a record, there are layers of grooves that we're moving out of the mind. And as we're moving out of becoming the witness, we enter into the heart. We fall into the heart and we experience a union with unity, with God in a way that we've never. But as long as we are within our mind and we haven't stepped out of the center of the mind, we will feel abandoned. The mind will drag us around the block. The visions will delude our sense of reality, and we will never fall within the universe or within the heart.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
thank you.
My pleasure. Anything else you want to know?
I think that's it for now.
Well, right. Very good.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Excuse me.
It's all right.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. one of the benefits of dropping call waiting. Nobody waiting.
I see.
So lines are open. People mm-hmm. can call 416-690-6391.
All right. So it's a very interesting time within our culture because as an individual, we're beginning to create options. If I were to look at what's happening to a lot of people, which I find sort of interesting throughout America and in Canada, people are creating all these endless vision boards. In some degree, I think that they're terrific. But what is that about? Is that really because if I sit there and sit on the couch and hope that I'm going to become a millionaire, that I'm going to become a millionaire? Well, sadly, I'm sorry, that is not going to happen. So what are people trying to do?
What are people trying to do by picking up these endless photographs and pinning them onto a board and saying, that's my life? Is that because that is where our culture is at? It's what we're feeling that we're needing to do at this particular point? That's as far as we've gotten. But does it actually mean that we're trying to reunite ourselves in nature? We're trying to find a connection back. So it means that we made all these choices that we thought that we wanted. And even if we were all of a sudden were to become a millionaire, would this space of emptiness or that space still be there? The answer is yes. So are we trying to learn what it is like to be in this moment, but to actually reconnect to nature? There is a woman that has been walking along the same path. And as she's walking along the same path, her mind just endlessly wanders and wanders and wanders. So is she riding the adrenaline of time? Is she riding the adrenaline of emotions? Her entire time, she is endlessly wondering about this and wondering about this. And so her walk along the ocean every morning really isn't with the ocean. Her soul has moved her to go to the ocean. But if her meditation, if her walk would have been a silent meditation, and she all of a sudden began to say, you know what, I'm really looking to move to another place. I'm really trying to find at this stage within my life that I want to find peace. We are connected to the collective, which is the universe. That means that if I am walking down the street, if that means I am walking along a boardwalk, if that means I am, it means I need to stop. It means I needing not just to be in the right place at the right time, I'm actually needing to get into this real powerful experience of this moment. And not just, you know, in this time, in this moment, getting out of time. And to actually realize that meditation is because we're trying to reunite, we're trying to get the sense of union. And so one way to do this is there is a greater movement, if you look at the world, in sports and people going to the gym, and people are doing and they're going through the emotions of the actual physical steps, but are they actually on a boat in this moment? Are they trying to find their relationship with God back on the water? Are they walking along the water or the boardwalk and actually letting their mind and stepping out of the rut of their thoughts and the rut of their conversations? Are they actually merging into the ability to be with nature? A way to get a culture to do what a government or a religion wants you to do is to put you all into repetitive patterns. So if I basically get you all to wake up and I get you go to the to the subway and get into your car, if you are continuously repeating this repetitive experience, it becomes a part of obviously your identity. So the mind is sort of interesting because we've got the limbic system. And the limbic system is a part of the brain that was meant to really sing the grace of God. So the limbic system is there, or is designed, that we see nature and go, wow. We have the ability to be in this moment right now. And that the limbic system says, I am in union with God. It repeats, I am in union with God. I am in union with God. Wow, I'm in union with God. Wow, I'm in union with God. Instead of, we've become creatures that have become disconnected from the true meaning of nature. And even when people retire, which is sort of interesting, and they move to Victoria and Vancouver, California and Mexico, They're really knowing, they're wanting to connect, but their limbic system is still repeating repetitive patterns. But our culture no longer sings the repetitive patterns of the graces of God or the union in which we have with God. Our mind is actually repeating, I got to do this, I got to go here, I got to go here, okay, I got to take care of my car, I got to do here, I got to go. And so what's happening is that the design of our union with God, which is a part of the limbic system, which is really meant to keep us in this graceful place. In return, what we've replaced, this union or this chant or this mantra or these constant waves of union, we've replaced it with repetitive thoughts, worries, concerns, fears, addiction, and the ego loves the power of the limbic system. And so the limbic system has, in a sense, repeats and distracts and moves us away from this union that we're meant to experience. And so when we're trying to go into meditation or try to get into our heart, the repetitive pattern of the limbic system repeats it because it never stops. Why? Because the limbic system is designed to be a constant wave, constant movement of this union with God. And instead of experiencing this constant union, it has been replaced with redundant information and addictions and confusions and adrenalines and fears. It no longer provides this movement of union. And so the limbic system, when we are in a place in nature and we can really be in this moment and really absorb the power of this moment and reconnect with the true aspects of nature, does the limbic system reinitiate itself with saying, I'm in union, I'm in union, I'm in the grace of God. And this is what meditation does as well, that eventually we learn how to step out of the repetitive and we're not taking this repetitive thoughts that the limbic system and the mind keeps producing. We're no longer feeling so insulted. And what happens to a lot of people, they're constantly trying to get out of their mind because we're feeling offended, we're feeling assaulted, we're feeling that we can control and you can't. And so when we bring ourselves back into the heart and we're in a place of meditation, the limbic system begins to sing the glory of God.
Well, we have another caller.
All right.
Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You're on the air.
Oh, wonderful. I have a question. Now, I'm new to sort of things that I'm allowed to ask, so tell me if I'm off base here, but I'm new to learning how to channel, and I've had a lot of people who are telling me I have to be careful that I don't tap into negative spirit, and then I also hear people saying that that doesn't exist, so there's a little bit of confusion, and I'm hoping to clear my fears.
Okay. Well, it's interesting enough here, it's a matter of how you set things up, which basically means that there are rules when you drive a car. So why would there not be rules for you as being an instrument? Are there lower vibrations? Absolutely. I can't imagine that the devil is going to drag you around the block. I just don't think it's going to happen. But does it mean that we can wear ourselves out because we can actually tap into the wrong kinds of energy? Just as we can meet the wrong kinds of people that really truly drain us, we can also tap into the wrong energy. We're just assuming that everyone is at peace when they pass over. In actuality, that isn't always the truth because there are a lot of people that are angry or very confused and they are stuck or they can be stuck or, you know, so there's lots of different kinds of circumstances. When you have a particular gift, you want to basically, first of all, create a prayer, and that prayer is actually to ask for the highest and the highest only. It also means that there's a moment where you actually surrender yourself for that energy to come actually in. So in a sense, you're opening up this floodgate. What Bart learned instinctively is that within deep, deep, deep meditation, he got a word. And that word within deepest meditation, which actually was not really a word, it was sort of like a symbolism, that when he saw that or heard that, then he would let go and there would be a spirit guide that would literally stand on both sides of the door. So imagine that you are opening yourself. Should you ask spirit to protect you and to put a spirit guide, a protector guide on both sides of the door because you're opening up this pathway? Absolutely. Are you there to set up rules and regulations with spirit? With other words, I don't want to feel the emotions of tragedy. I don't want to speak about death. I do not want to speak about, do you need to create an infrastructure that really allows you to become really sharp at what you do? The answer is yes. Because if we don't create in the beginning these infrastructures, this energy cannot really channel. So it's like hitting a note and you're off key. And so to really create, so just before Bart, you know, surrenders himself and allows me to come through, he is looking for that image. And when that image appears, he lets go. I come through and he wants a protector guide on both sides. At the end, there is also a condition that there are no residuals left. So with other words, he wants my energy to be completely let go and no residuals of a session or what's happened within your session with a client. And so when he all of a sudden switches and we cross pathways and he enters back into his consciousness, he doesn't want any residuals or emotions or energies that are left of anything. So in a sense, you're needing as an individual to really think about what are the rules? What are the conditions? What are you going to look for? That really that is a signal. And that you say a prayer and that you create these conditions, it is what sets you apart and makes you a great channeler or a great psychic. Where most individuals, they don't really create the infrastructure. So the intensity or the sharpness or the clarity or the articulation or the words in which are needed are in there because they don't have the infrastructure. Eventually, as you move along, you can take all the conditions off. In a sense, Bart did not let me speak about past lives. He would not let me speak about financial issues. He would not let me speak about health. He basically created restrictions. And that wasn't because he distrusted the information, but that was really to hold a particular focus until gradually he allowed one aspect and another aspect until he sensed the energy would really divinely, purely being tapped into. So in a sense, it's like becoming an athlete. And in a sense, as a channeler, you want to become a great athlete. And when you reach that level of ability, then you open up the door and say, now I will allow all that to come through.
Sorry.
Okay. I guess I'm unsure of what it is I am tapping into 100%. Is there any way of finding out?
All right. So tell me, what have you learned so far? Tell me what happens.
Well, I started listening to the Abraham Hicks CDs. And I started to feel a deep desire to be close to that sort of pure energy, pure love. So I started meditation, and I thought it was Abraham coming through, spelling letters with my body. And then it turned over to it was my guide, who I call Sonia. When it comes through, sometimes it's a lot of mental information coming through. Sometimes she will spell letters with my body to get my attention. If I'm in a noisy area or I'm not listening, I feel the energy come in and she'll spell words with my body.
Okay. So you can't permit that to happen. So first of all, it isn't Abraham because there is only one particular person
that can actually, now people certainly say, you know, they've received it from Archangel. Can you actually channel the light, but you can't really channel the essence of Archangel Michael or Abraham? They, you know, that really belongs to one particular person because it's a layer of an oversoul, which is a totally different subject. You're needing to understand that spirit, and this is a very difficult thing to comprehend, spirit has no sense of this realm whatsoever. So when you have a particular spirit guide and you're beginning to fine-tune, your spirit guide thinks that there is nothing appropriate about it. And that's why spirit just goes on and on and on and on. What is needing to happen, if you're choosing for that to happen, is you're needing to simply say, you can't come forward just because you want to. You can't speak to me whenever you want to. You can't, with other words, only under these conditions can you come forward and have a dialogue if you choose to do so. But other words, these are not acceptable. I can't begin to tell you how many individuals go through similar experiences as you, and they go into spontaneous trances, but in actuality, this is called spiritual abuse. And it isn't because your spirit guide is aware, it isn't, the rules aren't there. So you're needing to set the rules into place. Tell me, why do you want to channel?
Pardon me?
Why do you want to channel?
I feel channeling is... I've been interested in it for many years, but never thought I could actually do it. Then when I started getting energy coming through and my body's rocking and I'm getting messages, it really filled a void in my soul. I was searching and searching and searching, and when I found it, I knew that was what I needed to feel whole.
Okay. So,
but I'm afraid because I'm not sure what's going on and who it is and if it's always the same person.
Right. So I think, first of all, the energy that you're pulled, do you understand anything about the Kundalini?
That's sexual energy, isn't it?
No, well, for some, yes.
Okay.
The Kundalini is actually very much like a snake. So the Kundalini lies at the base of your chakra. The Kundalini actually comes forward in very much like a serpent. But in actuality, if you look at the fiber optics, there are thousands of streams of consciousness. When you are pulling this energy up and you are rocking, you're actually forcing an energy to come up. And that can be dangerous to some degree, because we can also have what's called spontaneous Kundalini combustions, which are can be very dramatic. But if we learn how to pull this energy up, we actually feel in union with God. So I do not believe that what you're actually experiencing is just because of your spirit guide. I believe that you're tapping into a greater energy and that you could actually have that blissful experience, that true sense of that void without opening yourself to channel or putting your body to spell out letters or figures. So in actuality, I think these are two separate issues. And for a lot of people, they do feel that union in a way that they cannot find in any other way. You know, it's a part of what they feel, but that's really the energy of the Kundalini. I would suggest that you read on the Kundalini. I think it's for you to understand what it really represents. I think it will help you a great deal. I think that your spirit guide is rebellious. I think that your spirit guide at some times is very in focus, and other times it isn't. And I think sometimes you're being pulled around the block, and other times you're not being pulled. And so you're needing to set some rules by simply saying, you cannot just do what you want to do. These are the conditions. I will open up myself as a channel only for 5 minutes. No other, you're really needing to set some guidelines. But again, and this can be disconcerting, if you pull the energy up too high, meaning the Kundalini, it can actually have the opposite, a negative experience. So I suggest that you learn more about the Kundalini. And there are some terrific books that are on the market, and that's what I would do.
Now, as far as what I was trying to achieve is trying to channel like Bart is channeling you, where basically someone else is speaking through me,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure how to achieve that.
Okay. That you need to learn from someone. If I, you know, Bart doesn't very often teach a course on channeling. And if he teaches a course on channeling, which I don't think that he's going to do in the future, and I could be very wrong because I never know what he's going to do next, I would take a course of a similar nature or find someone that you very much trust. You need training. So it isn't because I don't think that you have a gift. You're really needing to get trained by someone that really has reached that level of success, that level of clarity, that level of consistency. That's who you want to learn from. And, you know, I don't think that a lot of individuals just assume you can just go into trance. I mean, Bart has been channeling for 25 years, so that's a very long time. You're also needing to understand that he as an individual didn't really understand. So he didn't necessarily take courses. He began to read books on the Kundalini. He began to really educate himself. And so the more educated you become, the more you understand, the better channeler you become.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Do you understand that?
I do. I have been researching and... there's so much information out there, it's hard to know what to believe. So,
right. And you're absolutely right. There's a lot of information. And that's what somebody is saying. Find somebody that is reputable.
Okay.
Because if you can find somebody that is reputable, that's where everything begins to make sense. Because you're needing to, and that's the problem, there's so much information, and a lot of the information is garbage. Because these aren't truly, you know, there is a difference between someone that truly is on a spiritual path or someone that is going through a spiritual bypass. And that's an interesting concept by itself. And a lot of the material isn't grounded, isn't centered, isn't focused. It's all spiritual bypass. And that is why to concern yourself or to really educate yourself, find someone that is really reputable, someone that has, you know, really sustained that kind of ability, and at that particular point, go through some training with them, because that's the best thing in which you possibly could do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Okay.
All right. God bless you.
All right. And I think we've come to the end of the show. I mean,
right.
It's been a great show. I thank you very much, Dr. Williams.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I also want to thank my receptionist, Scott Thomas, who's been screening our calls, which was quite a nice little benefit.
Feature.
Yes. All right.
He's hired.
Yeah. Next time.
All right.
All right. So again, thank you, and we'll see you next week.
All right.